Okay, we are good. I'm calling the meeting is at 3:04 p.m. Rachel?
Okay, and for roll call, Dr. Paul Mittman?
Present.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Here.
Perfect. Mr. Mike Romano?
Here.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Present.
Mr. Dick Lubke?
Here.
Dr. Jennifer Leck?
She will not be attending.
She's not in today. Okay, I just wanted to double check. And then for staff, Mr. Kevin LaMountain?
Present.
Mr. Keith Blanchard?
Here.
And double checking, will Ms. Terry Stanfill be on today?
She should be.
Terry Stanfill, are you here?
She was having computer issues, so.
Okay. And then myself, Rachel Kearse, I am in attendance, and our Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan?
Present.
Thank you. At this time, we would like to see whom would be recused for the record. You could state your name.
Paul Mittman, and I will recuse, but I will stay on the call.
Thank you, sir. Will that be all? All right. Sounds like that is going to conclude the roll call and whom will be active in the meeting.
Great. And so I will turn the chair for this meeting over to Mr. Romano.
Awesome. Do I need to go through the preamble for starting this meeting off, Mr. LaMountain? Or...
Yes, if you would, Mr. Romano.
All right. So I guess we're calling to order this meeting at 3:06 p.m. on February 10th. The board, upon a majority of vote of the quorum of the members, may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.0383 on any matter of the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with exception of hearings. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also go into executive session to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussions of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law pursuant to ARS 38-431.0382. So with that, we will move to item number 2 on the agenda, which is review, discussion, and possible action regarding proposed statutory changes related to the Student Tuition Recovery Fund and assessments, including transmittal to the legislature. Mr. LaMountain, would you like to give us a brief overview before we break into discussion?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Thank you again all for agreeing to come on to this special board meeting today to discuss the potential of moving forward some legislation that we've been talking about for quite some time. Before we get started, I would like to first of all give you just some insight. Obviously, this stemmed from a change in Department of Education regulations back in July 1st of 2020. As it related to the definition of regionally accredited institutions, nationally accredited institutions, and such. So over the last number of months, we've certainly met and talked about this and some of the challenges is that this poses to the current statute, the way it's written. Thankfully, we have spent quite a bit of time, and I had a group of individuals that were part of a focus group that helped with this process of looking at the statutes and potentially coming up with language that would be to get an effort that the language that we would move this forward at least has had some representation from each of the various parties that are represented in the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. And specifically, I'd like to call out and thank the schools that were participants in the Student Tuition Recovery Fund Committee, We've met a number of times since 1st of December. We met a final time this week that we're in, which is to look at the documentation that I sent to all of the board members today. Those institutions that were part of this are Grand Canyon University, Midwestern University, University of Advancing Technologies. Those are representing the formerly regionally accredited institutions. The Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences and PIBA Medical Institutes, which represented the nationally accredited institutions that were formerly recognized as national. And then we had two vocational non-accredited schools, and that would be Keno College and Advanced Business Learning. We also had representation from the Arizona Private School Association in Fred Lockhart representing his group throughout these conversations and discussions. So over a period of time, we have met, we have looked at the legislation, we have met, we have gone through various financial spreadsheets to see exactly what the would help keep the One Strife Fund alive and thriving as it moves forward, and also address the concerns that we have with the change in the Department of Education regulation. So before you today, I presented to each board member a review, a document that would be submitted to the Senate for sponsorship of a legislation for this upcoming session. So that is a three-page document, and I just wanted to provide you just some, and for those that are on the call today that are listening in, just some highlights of what that is and what those changes are, and then would like to open it up for dialogue and questions and answers from the board. So the overall intent of this was to align our statutes with the new defined the definition of accredited, non-accredited, regionally and nationally accredited institutions that changed from the Department of Education back in July. So what this particular piece of legislation would do is it would remove, there are two specific exemptions in the current statutes. This would strike those two exemptions, and those exemptions on the document that you have in front of you are under 32-3071 definitions, and it would be number 9 and number 10. That both of those restrictions, would be deleted from our current statute. So those exemptions would be gone. The next would be to implement so taking away that restriction then allows both the nationally accredited institutions, the formerly regionally accredited institutions, and the non-accredited institutions to all have an equal pay into the Arizona Student Tuition Recovery Fund. Which, as we've mentioned a number of times, is below the minimum of the $500,000 fund balance that we're required to keep in there. it would remove those restrictions. It would implement a cap so that no institution's location. So if multiple locations, there would still be a cap of $25,000. It would be a $25,000 cap. That the most that they would pay per location, an institution would pay per location per assessment year. So there would be the $25,000 cap. It would maintain the $500,000 minimum fund balance, meaning that if we get below the $500,000 mark, an assessment would be brought to the board that year and would be agreed to. The board would ask me at that particular point, ask staff to invoice the institutions. The statute, the way it's written now, or the proposed statute, would make this, any of the changes that we're talking about in this statute, retroactive to January 1st of 2020. That would be the billing cycle that we've are currently in, that we've made assessments to for the institutions. It clarifies some language that's as it relates to electronic records. The statute also maintains a current level of per student fee, which is currently 0.2% of the total fees and tuition for the program. It'll maintain that with a cap up to $10 per student. So no institution would pay more than $10 per student per the newly enrolled student. The other piece to this is that it has removed and stricken from the statute the piece that is that also had a discussion about the re-enrolled students. That part has been stricken as well. So it's not, it is, this is only going to be defined as newly enrolled students within that period of time, newly enrolled students that are in Arizona. So that part is in there as well. But that one component has been struck, the re-enrollment. And then we believe that based on some projections that we've done, that the money now that the all of the institutions in the state of Arizona will be responsible for paying into the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, that there will be times throughout the next upcoming years that there will be enough in that fund to not invoice institutions. Right now, that looks to be 2023 or 2024, but there's a lot of variables in there. But one of the things that this will do is maintain a consistent flow so that we maintain the student records. We can still continue to represent the students' interests and protect the students of the state of Arizona for a long time to come. So that is in a nutshell what the changes are. Each of you have had the information. So I'm open to any questions that you have moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Very thorough explanation, so thank you for that. As well as, before we jump into it, to at least acknowledge the work that you and the other staff have done, as well as the other schools in bringing this type of proposal forward. I think this really embodies what we would have hoped would have occurred previously, and as we're moving towards that, we're excited to have the opportunity to discuss it. So thank you very much for your effort and the effort of the schools to bring this forward for discussion. I did notice that Ms. Blanchard had raised his hand, and I wasn't sure if he was looking to add something additional.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. Hey, Mr. LaMountain, Fred Lockhart is trying to get in. I think he's trying to have you click him in.
I do not have the ability. I don't see him on here. So if you could just have him maybe call in on that phone number, that would be great.
He did, because he's kind of pending. You don't see him anywhere?
I do not.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. So with that, I have a couple questions to gain some clarity, but wanted to afford my fellow board members an opportunity to engage in any clarifying questions or the discussion.
Mr. Chairman, board member Tharp. I don't have any. I think it's fairly clear to me, so I don't have any questions at this time.
This is Scott Wallace. Can you go over item 6, per student fee? Give me an example of that.
The per student fee?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Mr. Wallace, what the per student and Mr. Chair, Mr. Wallace, what the per student fee is? So, for every newly enrolled student that is a resident of Arizona or that is taking a course that is here that is online that is a resident of Arizona, the newly enrolled student is 0.2% of the gross tuition for that program, up to a $10 fee. So if you were to take some schools that charge that have a higher rate of tuition, that $10 cap would potentially, I mean, if we didn't put the cap on it, would potentially be $20 or $30 or $40 or $50 per student. what this does is it maintains basically what we've been doing over the years, which is keeping it that the 0.2%. So there are some schools that have a very low tuition rate that, as opposed to paying $10, some of those institutions would be paying $1.50 or $2 or $3 per student. But it's capped at no institution will pay more than $10.
Okay. And that tied into the $25,000, is that, or is that in addition?
Well, they're two separate calculations. So one is up to the $10 per student. So for example, if you're a larger school and you have thousands of students, newly enrolled students at $10, and that's one of the things that this particular piece of potential legislation that we're looking at here, or change to statute, is here to address, which is that $10 could make some institutions that are large have extremely, extremely high bills, right? $10 per student, and if you've got 40,000 students, that's $400,000 into the fund. So what this does is it caps it at $10 per student, and then multiply that $10 times the number of students that you have, the newly enrolled Arizona students that you have, capped at 25,000. So even if you go beyond that, there is nothing that goes beyond the $25,000 cap.
Okay. Got it.
Since it was brought up, Mr. LaMountain, I wanted to get some clarity around this. I believe the intent of the newly enrolled student definition, which is under number 5 of 32-3071, the intent, as I understand it, is really for students who have not just enrolled, but actually started and matriculated through to some point where the student is obligated for some level of tuition or qualifies for refund versus just purely enrolled. We know many institutions do use the term enrolled at various states when a student may complete an application or something of that nature. So I did want to verify that is the intent, that it is for students who have matriculated to a point where tuition is now owed for that. So let me stop there and just verify that is the intent.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the board, that is the intent of the legislation, or excuse me, of that particular component of the statute, is those students that have enrolled, that started, now whether they've completed is a different story, but that they've started, they've gone in, they've matriculated into a program. There was some conversation that we did have as a group about utilizing the word matriculation or matriculate. I don't know that there's enough of a difference between the term matriculate over enrolled, other than matriculation is typically used in higher ed a bit more than it is in other types of schools and other types of programs. But that is the intent of that is that the students started, and that in one way or another, a portion of their fees or tuition has been collected and retained by the institution.
And that has not only been the intent, but the practice as well of fee collection. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And so I don't know if it necessitates any dialogue around some type of consideration to adjust that term, or if we are content to say, we understand the intent, we understand what the practice has been, and we're comfortable with keeping that as is. So I pose that question to my fellow board members of if you feel like there's value in evaluating how we define that term or leave it as is.
I'm fine with leaving it as is, Mr. Chair.
And I just want to confirm that I'm allowed to participate as long as I'm not voting, or should I keep my opinions to myself?
I think, Dr. Mittman, at this point, Mr. Chair and Dr. Mittman, I believe that if you want to make a comment, it would have to come into play during the open
call to the public. Okay, that's fine.
Mr. Wallace, Mr. Lupke, any additional thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Mr. Lupke. I have no objections to the way it's written presently.
No, Scott Wallace, I'm good with what has been presented. Gus?
Very good. And
Mr. Chair and members of the board, too, you know, our board meeting today is a public record. So if there were ever any challenges to that, certainly this is the record. We would have the opportunity to come back and say this is the intent of the statute, so that we would it, at least it's on record.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Any other questions or discussion from board members?
Yeah, this is Scott Wallace. Again, on the all these are 1 through 7 that are on your email, they're all incorporated in the draft changes, Title 32, Chapter 30.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Mr. Wallace, yes. All of those are a component of this.
Okay, thank you.
Based on there not being any additional questions or discussion, would any board members like to entertain making a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion. I just want to make sure I'm wording this right. So are we making a motion to forward this to the state legislature or just accept it as a board?
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Board Member Tharp, yes, it would be both. You are absolutely correct. It would be to accept this as it is and then to delegate to Mr. LaMountain to transmit to the legislature.
Okay. Well, in that case, I make a motion that we, the board approves and accepts the change in language to our rules. As presented in the document from Mr. LaMountain, and that we further direct board staff to forward to the legislature.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Tharp, just as a point of clarification, it's statute, not rule.
Okay, I amend it to accept the change of statute.
All right, we'll take Mr. Wallace's as the second, although we appreciate Mr. Lupke throwing that out. And just to verify, Mr. LaMountain, do you need us to call out the actual changes, or is how it has been stated acceptable at this time?
How it's been stated is acceptable at this time, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I don't see that there's any, as long as you don't have any other additional changes to the document that I provided you, then we can move that forward to the Senate.
Well, it would seem as though your team and yourself have done an excellent job and made our work very easy. So thank you. Ms. Kearse, would you please take roll call on a vote?
Yes. Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Dick Lupke, your vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Ayes have it.
Tremendous. Dr. Mittman, you're more than welcome to rejoin.
As a member of the public, I just want to say, I also want to echo your remarks, Mr. Romano, and thank our executive director and the staff for all the work that went into this. This was a real curveball when the Department of Ed threw it at us last summer. And I paradoxically, I think you came up with a solution that I think everyone is happy with, and it shores up the strike fund. So other than, you know, maybe wanting to send you to Washington, D.C. to take care of some things there, I just want to acknowledge all of the work that went into this. It's really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
We do have a call to the public. If recognizing Dr. Mittman as the chair back in his seat, I guess we can move the agenda along.
You know what? I would say, since you did such a great job, I'll leave it to you, Mr. Romano, to call for adjournment, unless there's any other comments from the public.
All right. Well, with that, the meeting is officially adjourned at 3:30 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.